Introduction to R234. This is Willard Thompson inviting you to join us once more for a visit behind scenes with the men responsible for educational radio, the men who direct the universities of the air. These are the men who formulate policies, who decide what will be heard and when. And our guests today are from three of the nation's leading universities. Mr. James Chavone, production director of station WUOM at the University of Michigan. Mr. Glenn Elstrom, acting program director of station WOSU, Ohio State University. And Mr. William Harley, program director of station WHA, the University of Wisconsin. Their topic is programming and production of educational programs. First, Mr. Harley, could we have your views on the subject?
Yes, I'd be glad to do that. Our station is a 5,000-watt daytime-only station, which is located on the campus of the university. In effect, it's an instrument of communication which attempts to extend the benefits of the university to all the people throughout the state. We more or less implement a policy established by one of our former presidents, Charles Van Hise, who felt that the boundaries of the campus should be the boundaries of the state. And so we examine the resources that we have on the campus and those that we feel that will lend themselves to broadcast are put on the air so that these people in the communities of far away from Madison have an opportunity to enjoy some of the things that those of us who live on the campus can have and would have exclusively if it were not for this modern method of transmission.
Bill, I'd agree to that because in our station operation, a 5,000-watt station at WOSU in Columbus, Ohio, we follow pretty much the same principle in that we are trying to bring to the people of the state of Ohio the cultural resources of that great university. And so we feel a very definite responsibility to our radio audience in making available to them some of the areas that we are actively engaged in on the campus to those people who, for various kinds of reasons, are not able to come to the university for study.
Mr. Chavone, you're a production man, but does that pretty well tie in with the policy that's followed at your station?
Yes, generally speaking, I think that the University of Michigan, as both in Ohio and Wisconsin, we attempt to extend the benefits which are available to students and other personnel on our own campus to the general area of the state, to include all of the population of the state of Michigan. However, in addition to that, too, in addition to extending merely the academic benefits which we have on campus, it's possible for us, because of our unique position, to also give them a lot of interesting information in a dramatic form of presentation, which is entertaining and adaptable to the medium of radio and does its own job by way of extending and uplifting the culture and education of our people. For example, on our campus, we have a famous collection known as the Clements Library of Rare Americana. There are a number of interesting documents there, original documents dating back from the days of the Revolutionary War and following the tracing of our civilization and the American society to date. Many of these original documents are little known throughout the country, and by the device of radio in which we may dramatize broadcasts based on these original documents, people are made aware of their existence, where they are located, and learn history through the medium of radio broadcasting.
Well, now, you gentlemen have a pretty big decision on your hands. It's your decision as to what the people who listen to your station are going to hear. Just how do you go about deciding what that will be? Mr. Harley, what's your idea on that?
Well, let me begin by stating a policy that seems to me is the only one that justifies the existence of stations such as ours, and that is that we are providing a service that is not generally available elsewhere. In other words, if we merely ape the type of programs that are being presented by the commercial stations, we're not really pulling our weight, because on these commercial stations you can get certain things in a great multiplicity. And if we merely do the same thing, why, there's not much point to our being on the air. So in one way, we examine the whole breadth of information and education and entertainment and fill in the gaps. That's one way to begin. In other words, we put on a large proportion of symphonic music at regular times so that people can get that in their radio fare. We do programs of adult education in a great variety of subject matter fields, in literature and sociology and anthropology, things of that nature, so that adults can either continue the education which they may have begun on campuses, or have an opportunity to get an education in that they might have been denied them before. Glenn, how do you feel about it?
Well, Bill, we've heard a lot of talk all the way along the line about wants and needs, and of course it's a stock expression at this point to give the radio public what they want. But we do know from careful research and analysis that people aren't too much aware in all instances of exactly what they want. And I think it's our responsibility as university broadcasters, as you indicated, Bill, to break away from this stereotype and to take from our vast resources in the university these various areas and bring them to the people to help them discover these needs and wants that we're always just talking about. And that is what we do there at the university. And in the final analysis, we in the program department have to make some pretty big decisions, I think. And we try to enlist the services of all the experts around us. We know that there are certain areas of our culture, these things that are right with us here now, today, that need some kind of explanation or some kind of servicing. And so we, again, go to those experts and get their advice as to the best approach, not the radio techniques, mind you, but the best approach from their areas to help solve and present and determine these problems.
Well, as Bill Harley points out a moment ago, part of our function is to provide a unique type of programming which is not available elsewhere at all times. And in making such a statement as that, I suppose the listener could readily pose a question in his mind right at this very moment. Why then are you broadcasting such programs as news, for example, sporting events, which are, in effect, available on other stations at the same time? And I think we should make a clarity on that point for the listener's point of view.
I think that's true. Let's take the matter of news, for example. Certainly that is available at almost any hour of the day over a great many stations. Are we merely providing duplication? Well, at Wisconsin, we think not. In other words, we think that we can, in effect, present at least a different type of news. It's free from interruption. It can examine what we feel is more significant news, omitting much of the trivia that is sometimes included in news reports, and give more extended discussion to what we feel is really the important news. Then we try to go beyond that and give interpretation and meaning to the news. I mean, today people are being assailed from every direction all the time by thousands and millions of facts and so on. So that what we need to do is provide interpretation and significance. And I think almost all of us try to do programs of that nature, isn't that? Don't you do that at Ohio?
Yes, I think if we just give a straight news wire service report, probably Jim's suggestion is right, that it's a mere duplication and we aren't, as you said earlier, Bill, pulling our load. But again, it goes back to this thing that I was talking about before, the areas of specialists that we have to bring out meaning to the news which otherwise might not be there. And I think for that reason, if for no other reason, that we're justified in including this news reporting in our schedule.
I notice, Mr. Elstrom, you said that in many instances the audiences didn't particularly know what they would like if they hadn't had an opportunity to hear it first. How big a part does the audience play in determining what will be heard on your station?
Well, it plays a very great part because we do, again, something that can't be done in commercial radio, because if you look at it in a sensible way, it's a dollar and cents business. But we try constantly at our place to personalize the station, and we encourage contact from the listener to the station. And in many areas, a mere suggestion from them, I don't mean one letter, but enough to make it significant, will open up an avenue or a need that we might do something about. And so a new program idea begins to evolve from that kind of suggestion.
There's a very interesting example I should like to talk to for a moment here to point out another aspect of educational broadcasting function as not entirely opposed to the commercial effort. After all, the commercial broadcasters have their own institutions and functions, and some of them are very good. We had a situation in our locality where the commercial broadcasting had been carrying a program of symphonic music from the network on a Sunday afternoon. When the football season blossomed out in our community, the commercial station, because of financial considerations, found it expedient to get into broadcasting these football games as a service to their communities and also as a means of revenue which they need in order to maintain their business. Through an integration, it worked out that by our station carrying that program, we were able to serve a function of providing, as Bill Harley mentioned a moment ago, a unique program not available at that time. In other words, if we had not carried the symphonic musical program at that time segment of the afternoon, it would not have been available to the listeners in that area who did want it. And there were many, of course, which made a big protest against the commercial station for getting into football as against this carrying of the musical program. So actually, we served a dual function then of providing a program which was not available anywhere else, and also showing that there is compatibility between both educational broadcasters and commercials.
I'm glad you brought that out, Jim, because I think that we should stress that there certainly is a place for both types of broadcasting. Certainly our commercial colleagues can do many things that we can't even begin to attempt, like great symphonic orchestras and so on, and worldwide news coverage, things of that nature. But we feel, too, that there is a place for the type of broadcasting we do which can be aimed at specialized audiences. The commercial broadcaster, by the very nature of the business that he is in, has to strive for a large audience all the time, pretty much. And we are free of the necessity of pleasing sponsors and so on, and therefore can experiment with different techniques, and we can broadcast for audiences, fairly small groups, special interest groups, and can therefore provide a service that would not otherwise be available to segments of the radio audience.
Gentlemen, we have just a minute now. I was wondering, perhaps you could give me something of an idea of the challenge that faces the educational broadcasters today.
Well, I think it goes without saying that we all agree that we live in such a capsulated world. Everything is happening so fast. We hear news flashes. We read condensed magazine material and that sort of thing, and we're asking our people to make rational and intelligent decisions on the basis of that information. And so I think our responsibility is to enlarge and to broaden that whole concept so that we can really expect these people to make these intelligent decisions.
I would agree with that, Glenn, and with this further addition that I think we've got to try and marshal all the best minds and resources at our command to give people in these troubled times a measure of guidance and understanding, and perhaps a confidence of which, and perhaps a confidence of which, and perhaps a confidence of which, and perhaps the problems of this world. Then
our job would be to exploit all of the tools and devices of the medium of educational broadcasting to make possible these new ideals.
Gentlemen, I'm sorry, but time is up. I do want to thank you for your cooperation, and I'd like to remind the listeners to be with us again next week when we present another in this series of visits behind scenes in educational radio, The Universities of the Air. Our guests today were Mr. James Chavone, production director of station WUOM, the University of Michigan, Mr. Glenn Elstrom, acting program director of station WOSU, Ohio State University, and Mr. William Harley, program director of station WHA, the University of Wisconsin. This was a tape-recorded feature of the University of Illinois Radio Service.